by you, 95.7. New Orleans only classic rock. Good morning. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show. Hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving weekend. Hope you enjoyed your family. I'm going back to last week real quick. We work with a woman who traveled last Wednesday, and she stuck her head in the door of the studio here right before she left, and she said, "Guys, have a happy Thanksgiving." And I said, "Why do you look so sad?" She said, "I'm heading to the airport."
Right. And she was never seen or heard from again.
No, I mean, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, one of the most nightmarish days to be in an airport, to travel. Even last week, the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, it was just people just everywhere. And
it was madness.
And I'm sure yesterday was pretty rough, too, coming back. But, hey, it's the most traveled time of the year, and now we just sit back and wait for Christmas.
Yes. And many of the stores will be soon to get their 4th of July decorations out.
So I was just reading this, and I found it very interesting. And I saw the headline, and because I had seen something about this before, I knew the answer to this. The real way McDonald's makes their money, and it's not their food.
Oh, I know, exactly.
Real estate.
Okay, it's not what I was going to. I thought we were talking about something confined to a menu item.
What McDonald's, what they do usually, Brewster, is they will, with 95% of their stores, they franchise them out to individual owners like you, me, or anybody else. But what they'll do right before that, they buy the actual piece of property or that the building's going to be on.
And having seen the movie The Founder, which is very good, by the way.
Haven't seen that. I want to see that.
They actually touched on that. Ray Kroc, played by Michael Keaton, still a good movie. But yes, they did delve into that, where the real rainbow at the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is the real estate the buildings sit on.
And I'm sure, I never saw the movie, but they probably showed this in the movie back in the day when McDonald's was, when they wanted to open different franchises, different places, whether it was Kroc or somebody else, they would fly over neighborhoods and they would see where really heavily populated neighborhoods were. Oh, a McDonald's would be perfect here, and McDonald's would be, and they would just go buy the land. So that's how they make much of their money. And you know, usually when you're talking about businesses, small businesses, whatever the case may be, usually when they make their money, it's because of the business that they have. It's what they sell or what they do. But
see, I was going to say, if it was confined to menu items, don't they make a fortune like on soda? In McDonald's case with Coca-Cola products?
They do. And you're right about that. And if you're wondering, I'm glad you brought that up.
And it's not, it would be margin. It wouldn't be total profit because they're not comparable items. So you'd have to say, what's the margin on them? And I would say the margin for soda is much higher than other, the hamburgers. And
I'm glad you brought up the soda because I see people on Facebook and they say that they go to McDonald's to get a Coca-Cola because a Coca-Cola at McDonald's tastes better than any other restaurant. And a lot of people think it tastes better than right out of the can or the bottle. And I've seen several people on Facebook say that. And I just read something. There's a reason why the Coca-Cola is so good at McDonald's. There's a couple of reasons why. They the way they chill it over there, like some people when they get Coca-Cola, like some restaurants, when they get the syrup, they just leave it out. But the way McDonald's handles the Coca-Cola syrup is different. Their ice, the way they do their ice is different. And it's just a fresher Coca-Cola. So there is something to be said about that.
That has not been my experience at McDonald's, but leave that as it may be.
Oh, in my Coca-Cola days when I used to drink a ton of it, which is the reason I can't drink it anymore, I noticed that the Coke at McDonald's was better than at like other fast food places. I was convinced about that.
Never found
that. I thought I was crazy.
See, I don't care. You mentioned cans as opposed to I don't care for canned. I don't really, I drink I'm like you. I drink Coca-Cola Zero quite a bit. I drink too many of them late when it's approaching time to go to bed. And it doesn't have sugar, but it does have caffeine.
Yes.
And I have to watch out for that. Now, locally, I know these are at other places, and if you go to the Coca-Cola Museum and I guess would that be the headquarters in Atlanta, they have an entire room that is sodas from around the world that you can sample. And you talk about walking out of there with a nearly a diabetic coma, or not coma, but high.
Sure.
I mean, you can walk out of there and your blood sugar will be borderlining to where yours was when you had your little episode, over 1,000. But anyway, the only place that I have know of that has the, what is it, the Coke machines where you can pick different flavors, like all the different Coca-Cola products, would be Five Guys. They have those, and they have... They have the diet, they have the sugar-free, they'll have like all of the
I think Coke. Wendy's and some Burger Kings have those
really?
Too. Yeah, I've seen those. Yeah.
Maybe it's if I go to those, I tend to go through the drive-thru and not, but that's fun. If you go to Five Guys and you can make yourself like a diet cherry vanilla peach Fanta or whatever Coca-Cola product is your favorite.
That's good stuff. Well, there's more than 36,000 McDonald's locations worldwide. They serve more than 70 million people every day. They average about 77 or 78 burgers sold every second.
Hmm.
And that's a lot of food, and they make money, but they make their most money on real estate, because they buy the piece of property, they buy the building, and then they'll sell the franchise.
Fascinating. So
it really is. Interesting stuff. Always like to learn stuff. On Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. The John Osterlin Morning Show is brought to you by the most ordinary man in New Orleans, and Lamarck Ford. I hope you had a very happy Thanksgiving. I hope you enjoyed your family and your turkey. And all the stuff that goes with the turkey. I have a little interesting story. I was with a few friends on Thanksgiving here in the city. And they'd come over my place, my tenement. And then I said, there's a place near me that they've had a sign out for a week now outside the place. And it said, open Thanksgiving. And it had a big turkey on it. So I said, let's go.
I believe that was the methadone clinic.
I think it was right next to it or something. So I said, let's go there. So they come over my place, and then we go to that restaurant. But then the sign that's out front of the restaurant, it looks exactly the same. Says open Thanksgiving and has the big turkey. But suddenly, right next to the big turkey on the sign outside the restaurant were the words, not serving turkey. And it had an arrow. It had an arrow pointing at that turkey. Now, why would a restaurant have a sign for a week or two outside of it saying they're going to be open for Thanksgiving that included a turkey on the sign?
Right.
Then that day, all of a sudden, the words appeared next to it: "We are not serving turkey."
Let's say that thoroughfare which passes by that particular restaurant, which if it's the one I'm thinking you're talking about, it's somewhat new, correct?
Yes.
Let's just say that people pass by there prior to the Thanksgiving holiday, and they see the turkey, and they don't see the arrow, and they don't see the fine print, which I think that would qualify as fine print, right?
Yeah.
And you just see that sign, and you think, oh, ABC restaurant, turkey, let's go there for Thanksgiving. No one likes to cook on Thanksgiving, as I've tried to explain to my mother-in-law for 5 years now. So we go out. But do you see my point? You might drive by, glance over there, see the sign for the restaurant, be aware of it, see a placard outside with a turkey, and think, we're good to go.
That's what I thought. And then Thanksgiving Day, we walk over there, and these words are right next to the turkey that's on the sign, and it says, we're not cooking turkey. It was bizarre. So we decided.
Well, how was the meatloaf then?
Well, we didn't go there.
Oh.
We then went to another place that you and I have spent one Thanksgiving. We decided to walk.
The 8-year anniversary of that just passed yesterday.
Well, I renewed a couple of vows over there, and a couple of friends and me went to Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse. And it's
friends and I.
Friends and I. And it was fantastic. And they had the turkey dinner that you could get. And I really thought about it because...
How was the filet?
But I was in Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, and I had to get the steak, and it was perfect.
That's
and
right.
My two friends got the Thanksgiving, but because I was in Dickie's, I ended up getting the steak.
How was the Thanksgiving? Did you ask? Did they enjoy it?
Yeah.
They enjoyed the turkey and loved all of that.
And it was a good crowd there for a mid afternoon on Thanksgiving for Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse. There was a good crowd there and had a good time and it was really
my short. My story is much shorter. Mrs. Brewster and Mrs. Brewster's mother and I, for the second year in a row, we went to Messina's at the terminal out there by the Lakefront Airport, and they do a very good job for Thanksgiving, and we enjoyed it. Now, very nice meal. Very nice.
Now, when you say terminal, you're not talking about the bus terminal like by Greyhound Bus over here.
I'm sorry. What about Lakefront Airport? Did you not understand?
Oh, okay. Okay. That terminal. Okay. I got it. I get my terminals confused. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed yours.
Your terminals might be rewired. Might need to be rewired.
And there was a little bit of chaos yesterday in America because of snowstorms in different parts of the country. Hundreds of air flights were delayed, were canceled yesterday. Sunday, one of the heaviest traveled days of the year. And people were trying to make their way back, and then some are still trying to do that as we speak right now.
And there's nothing better than being stranded in an airport with snow falling outside and no end in sight.
And now that's Thanksgiving's in our rearview mirror. Get ready for Christmas.
And the 4th of July.
So over the Thanksgiving weekend, well, we had the New Orleans Saints. Well, that's the other thing about Thanksgiving. You know, you got 4 days from Thursday to Sunday. There is more football on television, college and pro, in those 4 days than I think in any 4-day span of the year.
Right.
And as a football fan, I used to feel guilty about watching so much college and pro football over the Thanksgiving 4-day weekend.
Wait till you get married.
Well, I used to feel guilty about it, Brewster, but I don't anymore. You know, it's holiday. You spend your holiday the way you want to spend your holiday. And whether it was Thanksgiving Day, starting with the pros, and then Friday with all the college football, Saturday with all the college football, Sunday, yesterday with all the pro football, and even tonight, there's one more game to finish the week. You could
go ahead and say Saturday into Sunday for that LSU A&M game.
Well, I was going to bring that up.
Right.
Because there are several LSU fans around here, and I saw them on Facebook and social media flat out blaming the referees for the loss. I mean, first and foremost, LSU gave up 74 points. So if I'm an LSU fan on Facebook blaming the referee for loss,
right,
I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, my team gave up 74 points! How would you like to be LSU's quarterback? Well, you know, we scored 72 and we lost. After the game, could you imagine being LSU or having anything to do with LSU's offense, sitting in the locker room saying, we just scored 72 points and we lost? So right there, the statement I just gave you should make you realize if you're complaining about the referees, like having it in for LSU. Brewster, I saw one guy, and he's a political guy around here. He has a lot of followers. He has people that... He said the LSU should really talk to the ACC, and he said, or the Big 12, right, because the SEC has not treated LSU fairly in the past 10 years with all the bad calls. He honestly feels
that they should leave the SEC, the Southeastern Conference, and go to the ACC or go to the Big 12 because people have it out for LSU.
Right.
And look, please look. There were a couple of bad calls. Sure, there were a couple of bad calls. There's a few bad calls in pretty much every football game, whether it's college or pro. There are some bad calls. But you can't say the referees. I saw one woman say that she was convinced, and no one can change her mind, that the referees had bet on Texas A&M. And so they didn't want to lose money. And so that's why that they had to throw the game for Texas. And people are saying this with a straight face on the internet and on their social media. Look, sure, were there a few questionable calls? Absolutely. One of the biggest was in the fourth quarter there when it looked like LSU had stopped Texas A&M on a fourth down, and they were a solid half yard short. But where the ref spotted the ball, it was a first down Texas A&M. If that call went the other way, there wouldn't have been one overtime.
I can't understand all of it.
The game would have been over in regulation. And I understand LSU head coach Ed Orgeron being a bit upset about it. And he was. And he said a few things after the game. That
couldn't understand them, but well, he said a few things.
That was something, though. But for my friends, or if you listen to the show, and if you think that the referees or the Southeastern Conference are out to get LSU, please tell me why. Tell me why, out of all of the schools in the Southeastern Conference, look, we went over this during the Alabama game that week, how the SEC headquarters is in Alabama, and most of the people who work at the SEC headquarters are Alabama Crimson Tide fans. So you would think that the Southeastern Conference, located in Alabama, the headquarters, leans towards the University of Alabama.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. There might be a bunch of Alabama fans that work at the headquarters of the SEC. But does that mean that they're going to throw things? They're going to throw games for Alabama? I mean, Nick Saban and Alabama, they're destroying people. They've been destroying people for a decade. They're destroying people. And anybody that thinks, boy, LSU, the refs had it in for them, and they really got the screws against Texas A&M. The defense gave up 72 points. So just think about that the next time you're going to say something. And coming up on the show, there was a fight after the game. An analyst for LSU, who not only has Parkinson's disease, he wears a pacemaker. He got punched after the game, and wait till you hear who punched him.
I'm going to talk about that, and then we'll talk about the Saints and Atlanta from Thursday. And that will lead us to, in just a bit, our usual Monday morning segment, Dirty Sunday Night Football.
Stick around on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Led Zeppelin there.
What? Zeppelin!
So did you survive Black Friday? Did you actually go into any retailers where they had massive Black Friday sales? Because I've seen some of the videos and go to our radio station's Facebook page, Bayou 957. I'm putting some up there this morning. We've already had a few up there over the weekend. Just insanity. What people, I mean, pushing each other, punching each other to get a television as if they're going to disappear. And these are...
It's chaos. It's madness. Well, that could have been stock footage from any Black Friday, huh?
But every year we see the same pretty much videos of people really getting physical to get good financial deals on
a $200 TV
Christmas presents.
That's probably worth $50.
Yeah, and these are the same people, many of them, just sat at a Thanksgiving table, giving thanks with their family and their friends and things like that. Well, anyways, that was Black Friday. And today is Cyber Monday, where you're supposed to go online, and because you're supposed to get great discounts if you shop and buy presents online.
Yes, today is the day. If you have credit, use it all. Use every bit of your credit today.
Yeah, so that's what I'm doing, Brewster. I camped out last night in front of my computer for Cyber Monday.
Look at you. You're ready to go.
It's working out. Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. So with all that football that we watched over the last 4 days, as I mentioned earlier, those 4 days, Thanksgiving, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that four-day weekend, there's more football packed into those 4 days on television than any 4 days that I could think of. It's crazy. Love it. OD'd on the football. And this week, past weekend, it got started with the Saints winning on Thanksgiving night. And people didn't mind their Thanksgiving being a little bit different than normal, with the Saints playing a home game on Thanksgiving night and beating their arch nemesis, the Atlanta Falcons. And even though the Saints, their offense wasn't clicking like it normally did, like it has been at least in the last few weeks, the defense looked real good. And boy, they're looking good. And they play again in 3 nights, back-to-back Thursday night games. This time they go to Texas to play the Dallas Cowboys. That's where Drew Brees grew up, outside of Austin, Texas. And Drew Brees, as a kid, grew up a diehard Dallas Cowboy fan. And now he lives to beat the team that he used to love.
And, of course, there was talk that for a while there, when people speculated that Sean Payton was itching to head back that way, has a home there, didn't work out. And good thing it didn't, because this looks to be the season where, after a couple of disappointing years the past couple of years, where things are just, it's like watching a jigsaw puzzle being put together in fast motion, like sped up, and the pieces start to come together.
Well, this year's 2018 Saints team, at least when it comes to Sean Payton, the coach, this is a rebirth for him. I mean, I know last year they did pretty well. They made it to the playoffs. But before that, there were several bad years in a row. And we all know if Sean Payton didn't win that Super Bowl in 2009, he wouldn't have survived all of those bad years in a row.
But I mean, you look
But before he was here, he was Bill Parcells' right hand. He was Bill Parcells' main assistant with the Dallas Cowboys. And if the Saints didn't hire him when they did, the next year he would have been the Dallas Cowboys head coach.
Right. But, I mean, after that, when the post-Super Bowl win, honeymoon or whatever you want to – however you want to term it, the really ugly defensive years with Rob Ryan calling the shots, and just – you talk about people being people start – I wouldn't say putting the bags on the heads again, but people thinking, well – we're not going to live to see another Saints Super Bowl appearance, let alone victory. Mm. But now that's turned 180 degrees, and it's good to see. It's good to see for the city.
Absolutely, and it's great, you know, 10, 11 weeks into the season, being the number one by pretty much every football fan that matters. The Saints right now are number one in the NFL power rankings.
I do have one, on a side note, I have a bone to pick with Channel 6, WDSU. And it's understandable, but throughout the game, they hyped that Jerry Seinfeld would be doing part of Jimmy Fallon's monologue after the show on The Tonight Show. And we got to see the post-game show with Jim Mora and all of the six people, and they're fine people. They do a good job. But it ran long so that when they joined The Tonight Show, that part was over. And so I got to see Jerry Seinfeld sitting and talking to Jimmy Fallon, but I wanted to see him do the part of the monologue. I'm sure it's probably on YouTube. I haven't gotten around to checking yet.
Yeah, I saw those ads too. I guess it was pretty funny. Jimmy Fallon sitting there saying, "I ate too much for Thanksgiving. I can't do the monologue." And Jerry's like, "All right, I'll do the monologue."
But he never. I'll do it.
But they were late. You're right about that. Were the guys filthy again on the
Well, yes. And then, of course, the week almost wraps up. Great matchup on paper, not so much on the field last night for Sunday Night Football.
As the Vikings get set to face the Packers on Sunday Night Football.
Aaron Rodgers, he is the master at finding that gap. There are two gaps.
It's a lot of extension.
Just squeezing this thing back in. How did it get that in there?
And it's a little bit short.
That hold was a little shaky right there. So Aaron Rodgers takes his deep shot.
Right in his face.
No matter what your body type is, they can find a position for you.
Just filthy.
Well, as I've said before, until we started focusing on how filthy they were, Brewster, I had no idea that Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth were so dirty. And it looks like that's the end for the Green Bay Packers coach, Mike McCarthy.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you could say kind of the same thing about Sean Payton as you could say with him, because he's got Aaron Rodgers, and he's only won one Super Bowl. Sean Payton has Drew Brees. Along with Tom Brady, they are the three greatest quarterbacks who ever lived in this generation. And Sean Payton and Drew Brees only have one Super Bowl.
Right. You could almost,
hopefully they're going to change that this year, but they should have more with those quarterbacks.
You could almost imagine McCarthy with the playbook laminated card, looking at that, but like working on his resume when he was not.
Yeah, they're going to. This is it for him. They're going to fire him after the season's over.
I think so.
The John Osterlin Morning Show, brought to you by the most ordinary man in New Orleans and Lamarck Ford on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock.
If you want to have a chance to meet the Rolling Stones in Boston, go to the website, check out Santa's Sack at Bayou957.com. This is a great prize pack. It includes airfare for two to Boston, two nights hotel, VIP tickets to see the Stones at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. On June 8th, 2019, and a meet and greet as well. How cool is that? One lucky winner and a guest will score that, and if you want to have a chance, go now to Santa's Sack at the website, Bayou957.com.
How about that?
That's a big deal.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I think we're probably going to have to take small pay cuts to cover the cost of that. Are you cool with that? Just say yes. Just move on. Move on. Ixnay.
Yeah.
Very good. Play along.
So after the LSU game, the historic LSU game where they lost 74-72, and again, I don't want to make too big of a deal about this, but I've heard so many people complaining.
Well, too late now.
Brewster, even on another radio station this morning, one of the hosts is saying collusion against the referees, against the SEC, LSU. Look, yeah, were there a few bad calls? Yeah, there were a few bad calls. You know, Texas A&M could say the same thing. There were a few bad calls. Any football game you watch, professional or college, you're going to see a few bad calls. Human beings, they're going to miss some things, and they're going to miss some things. It happens every time you watch a football game. No one's out to get LSU. And again, I can't stress this anymore. The people on social media that say that the referees bet against LSU and that the referees must have bet on Texas A&M, it's not a very becoming look for you, okay? I got another Facebook friend that says LSU, starting this morning, should start talking to the ACC and start talking to the Big 12 because they haven't been treated well by the SEC over the last decade. And he got like 100 likes. It's like, again, that's not a becoming look, whining and complaining like that. Like, in his mind, for whatever reason, the Southeastern Conference has it out for LSU. They just have LSU in their crosshairs, and they're going to do whatever they possibly can to not let LSU win. There are people that firmly believe that. And again, it's not a becoming look. Sure, did LSU, was there a couple of calls the other night that could have gone the other way that would have helped LSU? Sure. Texas A&M could say the same thing. And you watch every football game. There are missed calls. It happens. You know what bothers me? It's when, and we saw this. The fact that they still, for every, if it's a close call for, did they get the first down or not, they bring out, and here we are in the year 2018, when we have every, the technology we have is so incredible, where we could put something on the field where you would know down to the ultra meter if a team got a first down or not. You could get it to a piece of grass,
a billionth of an inch.
Yet they
you have cameras flying over on filaments that are thinner than the filaments in light bulbs that Edison created.
Yet if officials are not sure that they got a first down yet, not only do they bring out old chains, many times they're carried by very older, out of shape men.
Yes. And it's like an honorary gig, I believe.
Well, they have to start looking at that, Brewster, because during the Carolina Panthers-Seattle Seahawks game yesterday, another one of them got run over on the side of the sideline. I hope he's not dead, but we saw this happen. It doesn't happen all the time, but it happens enough where we should take old, overweight guys off the sidelines, the guys that are standing there holding the first down chains.
Right.
I mean, look.
Which may or may not be used ever.
We're too technically advanced for the chains. We're too technically advanced for the men that are holding most of these chains. And I saw this old fat guy yesterday get wiped out on the sidelines in Carolina, and then he hit his head. And I mean, I didn't know. I thought he was dead. And it's like, who? And again, we've seen it here at the Superdome. It must be a nice gig to get where you could be old and you could be out of shape, yet you could be standing on an NFL sideline holding a first down chain.
I think they're Elks. I think it's Elks Club. I don't know.
Well, anyways,
it's some sort of an honorary gig, I'm sure.
But we need to come up with a new system where we could put a computerized beep on the sideline where you would know by the blade of grass if the guy got a first down or not, and you won't have to bring out some overweight senior citizen carrying a chain from the 1930s. Coming up next, we will look at today in history. On this radio show, we call the segment Why Today Doesn't Suck. We hope you'll stay tuned for that report. Suck is next! On Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. The John Osterlin Morning Show is brought to you by the most ordinary man in New Orleans and Lamarck Ford. Let's look at today in history. And on this radio show, we call the segment
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
To November 26th. It was today in 1989.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
MTV Unplugged premiered. If you turned on MTV tonight in 1989 for the first time ever, you would have saw MTV Unplugged. It's some of your favorite bands, or maybe not.
And you would have seen them too.
Yeah, and they played acoustically, and they played acoustic, and they just they were unplugged. They didn't plug in their instruments, and I thought that was pretty cool. The TV series MTV Unplugged.
How does that work again? It's called Unplugged, so they didn't plug their stuff in.
Stripped down. And they always say...
So who was the first artist? Who was the first act?
Well, I'll tell you in a second.
Oh, but okay.
They always say...
Double parked, I'm sorry.
If you want to get the true definition of a song, even a heavy rock song, let's hear how it sounds unplugged. Let's hear how it sounds...
And some of them fall apart right there.
Yeah.
There are some songs that just don't transfer well to acoustic guitars. Cat Scratch Fever. How is that going to sound? You know, it's going to take a pretty good guitar player I just pulled that one out of
No, but you
can
say that about a lot of hard, heavy rock songs.
Right.
That they wouldn't sound as good if you unplugged them because they wouldn't be as hard and heavy.
Sure.
The band Squeeze.
Really? They were the first one?
The premiere episode of MTV Unplugged, hardly promoted. It was extremely lightly promoted by the network because it featured a lineup whose biggest name was the English pop group Squeeze.
Huh.
And did you know, I've always liked Squeeze. I always thought Squeeze was underrated. Did you know If you turn on MTV Live now, channel 1776 on your Cox cable here in New Orleans.
Wow.
And you see a show called Later with Jules Holland that comes out of London, England. It comes out of the BBC. Jules Holland was the original keyboardist of the band Squeeze.
I did not know that.
How about that? He kind of looks foolish now walking around introducing all the bands on that show. But they had a few bands on that night. Squeeze was the headliner, and that's why. And they were just trying something new. MTV Unplugged, and we talked about Nirvana, the anniversary of that last week.
Yes.
Pearl Jam had an incredible MTV Unplugged. November 26th. It was today in 1969.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
John Lennon participates in his last session with the Beatles. It was today in 1969, and they were mixing and editing the B-side, You Know My Name, Look Up My Number.
What was the A-side?
I don't have that in front of me. But they, John Lennon's last, it had to be on the Abbey Road album, right? It was today in 1969, and that was the B-side.
Yes.
But how about that? The last Beatles song he ever did, he ever had anything to do with, was the B-side, You Know My Name, Look Up the Number, and he mixed that today.
The A-side was a little tune called Let It Be.
Oh, okay, there you go. November 26th.
There's a little confusion there as far as the last album worked on was Abbey Road, but the last album released was Let It Be.
Yeah, that is something.
You know, because it sat there forever, and then they gave it to Phil Spector, who put the big wall of sound on everything, and then Let It Be came out in early 1970, I think.
But So
it leads some people to believe that was the last one worked on, but it wasn't.
Very interesting. And you're right. And, you know, when you think about it, Let It Be, even though they did it before Abbey Road, you would think Let It Be would make sense, just the title of it, the last Beatles album. Just okay, it's done. Let it be. And it was today where then President Franklin Delano Roosevelt established the modern Thanksgiving holiday. FDR today, way back when, said that it's going to be the fourth Thursday in November. And that's when Thanksgiving's going to be. It's going to be the fourth Thursday in November. And he said that today in 1939.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
Interesting that you mentioned Unplugged. It was on this date, November 26th, 1994.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
That's when Jimmy Page and Robert Plant debuted their live album, No Quarter, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant Unleaded. They didn't want to go with Unplugged. They went with Unleaded. Get it? Led.
Sure.
Unleaded. Which went to go on to platinum in the United States. A couple of your favorite bands here. It was on this date, November 26, 1976.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
When the Sex Pistols released their debut single, Anarchy in the UK, which would peak at number 38 on the UK single chart.
I am the Antichrist.
And aren't you a fan of the New York Dolls?
Big fan of the New York Dolls. And I read this, too. I got a kick out of this.
On this date, November 26, 1973.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
The New York Dolls performed their first concert at Biba's Rainbow Room in London, or as you refer to it, London, England. See, I would just say London, because most people know, unless it's London, Kentucky, they pretty much think you mean London, England.
But the only thing I said on my list about that, it said the New York Dolls played a restaurant today in London. That's all it said, played a restaurant. Half of them are on heroin, so I don't know what the hell was going on.
And happy birthday today, bassist for Fleetwood Mac, John McVie, born on this date in Dirt, so happy birthday, John McVie. Actually born in 1945.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
And I got one more. It was today in 1968.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
the band Cream played its farewell final concert.
Yeah.
It was at Royal Albert Hall over there in London, England.
And that's, London, England, right.
And that's where that power trio.
Not London, Kentucky.
And I heard.
Or Paris, Texas.
I heard after the show, Eric Clapton went to a restaurant and the New York Dolls started playing.
Oh, I don't know.
But they played.
Talk about heroin.
Yeah, Cream played their final show at Royal Albert Hall today in 1968. And they were a power trio. And all three of those guys, incredible musicians, not just Eric Clapton, but Ginger Baker and the great Jack Bruce on bass.
And that must be a segment that we call
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
Coming up, we haven't gotten to it yet, but I got to get to the details of this fight after the LSU-Texas A&M game.
That game was fixed, by the way. I didn't know if you knew.
Oh, knock it off. You're not going to believe who threw the first punch and who the first person that got Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. So after LSU historic loss on Saturday night where they lost 74-72 in seven overtimes to Texas A&M. After the game, there was a fight on the sidelines. And at first, no one knew what was going on. And then it became obvious when people started writing about it. It was started by the nephew of the head football coach at Texas A&M, Jimbo Fisher. His nephew, Cole Fisher, punched an LSU analyst named Steve Cragthorpe. Here's the problem. Steve Cragthorpe not only has Parkinson's disease, but he has a pacemaker. And Jimbo Fisher's nephew, Cole Fisher, punched a Parkinson's victim with a pacemaker right in the pacemaker. He punched the man who has a pacemaker. He hit him in his pacemaker.
Now let me toss out the obvious question. Did he throw a haymaker to the pacemaker?
I didn't see that. Well, what, you couldn't find any senior citizens, Cole Fisher? You couldn't find any amputees? Was it there someone there who had more of a disease than Parkinson's who you wanted to go punch as hard as you can? Now, and you got to remember something. Jimbo Fisher, in the last few years, was almost the LSU head coach a couple of different times. They offered him the job, and he turned it down while he was still at Florida State University. Jimbo Fisher used to be an assistant coach with LSU many years ago, and he loves Baton Rouge. He said that. But the last couple of times in the last few years, LSU has offered him a job and basically an open bank account to however much money he wants. He said no. And now he ended up over there at Texas A&M. And so after the game, after the historic 74-72, seven overtime win by Texas A&M over LSU, you got his punk nephew. And how do these family members get sideline passes? It must be nice. Oh, yeah, my father, his brother is Jimbo Fisher, the head football coach with Texas A&M. So that means because I'm my father's son, I, Cole Fisher, I get a sideline pass. I get to stand on the sideline. And then after the game, I get to hit my father. I get to hit people in their pacemakers. I walk up to people with Parkinson's disease who have pacemakers, and I close my fist, and I hit him in the pacemaker.
Allegedly.
As hard as I can. We saw it. Well, right after he did that, right after Cole Fisher did that to LSU analyst Steve Cragthorpe, former LSU running back, who's now some sort of a assistant coach with the team, Kevin Faulk, who had many years played for the New England Patriots, Kevin Faulk then punched Cole Fisher, and he just started punching people when he saw that.
According to a published report, Cole Fisher attended Robert C. Byrd High School in Clarksburg, West Virginia. He signed a letter of intent to play at Glenville State College, a Division II university in Glenville, West Virginia. He never participated at any games there. According to multiple sources, attended football events at Florida State while his uncle Jimbo Fisher was head coach. Cole's role on the Texas A&M sideline is uncertain, and he is not listed on the athletic department's official staff directory.
Well, that's what happens when your daddy is the brother of the head football coach at Texas A&M.
Allegedly.
You could just hang around the sideline and look for people with Parkinson's disease who have a pacemaker to go punch them as hard as you can with a closed fist in the pacemaker!
With, allegedly, a haymaker.
Cole Fisher. I wonder if he's going to have his sideline pass yanked. Other when your daddy is Jimbo, you know, you're the most powerful man in that town in Texas. My uncle is Jimbo.
I wonder if this is all just a ruse to hide the fact that this game is fixed. You know this game's fixed, right?
Come on.
Drinking that collusion Kool-Aid on a Monday morning.
We've talked about that this morning a few times. I've some of my Facebook friends thinking about leaving the SEC because LSU hasn't been treated right by the conference in the last decade. Really, again, saying something like that is not very becoming. There are bad calls in every game. Yeah, there were a couple of bad calls in the LSU 7 overtime game. But here's the way, instead of complaining about the game being fixed and blaming the officials, how about blaming LSU's defense for giving up 74 points? They gave up 74 points. You don't think that had anything to do with why they lost? You think it was all because of the referees?
Well, allegedly.
Giving up 74 points has a little bit to do with it. And look, yes, there were a few bad calls, but you're gonna see some bad calls in every football game, college and pro. That's proven. And I'll just say it one last time. It's just not very becoming. You know, saying the world's out to get us, the refs got paid, the fix was in, we're going to leave the SEC because it's just stop. Please stop. All right? All right, coming up on the show. There was a story around here about that giant dump over there in Waggaman a few years ago. You might remember the story. Where some people went to jail because that dump supposedly bribed some political people and one radio talk show host to put a couple of other dumps out of business. Do you know that story is back in the news? Stay tuned. We'll tell you why coming up on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. The John Osterlin Morning Show, brought to you by the most ordinary man in New Orleans. And Lamarck Ford. So the migrants are here. We've talked about it on the show. Have you been paying any attention to the news, the national news? We had mentioned how for the last couple of weeks, there's the number varies anywhere from a couple of thousand to 6,000 to 10,000. The number varies. People coming from their third world hellhole countries, crap hole countries. And it's been called a caravan, and they've been coming 2,500 miles. They're marching. Some of them have rides, and they're marching towards the American border. Well, they've San Diego now. They've shown up. There they are, and this has been political from day one. You know, this started before the United States midterm elections. And a lot of these people, they're leaving their Central American hellhole countries. And I'm calling them that for a couple of reasons. If they weren't hellholes, if they weren't crap holes, these people would not be leaving their countries. You leave your own country because it sucks. That's why you leave your own country, because it's a crap hole. And I call it that. Because, you know, some people were so upset that our president, Donald Trump, called some third world hellhole countries like Haiti and a few other ones. He called them crap holes. And some people, how dare our president, a sitting president of the United States, call these countries crap? Who could look at Haiti and not call it a crap hole? Please. Please tell me. It's the definition of a crap hole. And so are these Central American countries that these migrants are marching through Mexico. And Mexico really didn't want them there. At first, the Mexican government said, okay, you're coming through our country to then go invade and go America. You're gonna go illegally enter the United States. Okay, that's cool. You can go. But then when Mexico realized some of these people, and by the way, the caravan, what's amazing about this, I mean, you've got senior citizens. You've got people that can't walk. You've got people that have big health problems that said, you know what? I'm going to walk 2,500 miles to the United States. And here's the other thing that's amazing about the caravan. It's being recorded, video recorded. It's being filmed. It's being recorded. Usually when people want to sneak into the United States, they do it in the middle of the night. They go underground. Well, they'll go over a fence, but they don't want cameras. They don't want senior citizens with chronic health issues with them because it's going to make them entering the United States, it's going to make their entrance a little bit more difficult.
There are multiple edits in these documenting of these people on the move. They'll say, "No, okay, cut. Okay, you. Can you stand over here? You with the bandana? Okay, I want you to be over here. You two women to go together. Okay, action." And they'll start over.
And now you've got many in the American media who think that we should help these people, that we should, they said Albert Einstein was one of these people. Well, yeah, but Albert Einstein and his parents were leaving the Nazis. I don't see any Nazis in the countries that these people are coming from. And some people, some people are saying that, look, you know, it's America. We should open our arms for these people. We should be not. Look, if you want to become an American citizen, you know, put your name on the list, get in line, and do it the way most of the other immigrants have done it. But just
try to do your best to bring us something that we could use, like the skills and the mindset of, oh, I don't know, an Einstein.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know how many of these people that we see on television on a daily basis now, how many of these people you see in the caravan, I don't know if they're going to be compared to Einstein in any other way other than the fact that the migrant. And then, when you're watching the caravan, some of these people have rides sometimes, and you'll see, like, whether it's a pickup truck or whether it's a bus or whether it's some kind of sport utility vehicle, you know, they hop into it, but they don't want the cameras to catch that. I guess some people left the cameras rolling a little bit too long, but then they'll hop out of the nice vehicle when they want to protest. But look, I'm all for immigration, but you have to do it the right way. You really do. And you know, our country right now, our economy is doing great. Most Americans have jobs. You know, black unemployment, Latino unemployment, women unemployment, all at a record all-time low. That's why this Christmas and holiday season, we're going to break the record in this country. That's what most experts who look at this kind of thing say. When it comes to spending money for Christmas presents, holiday presents, this year we're going to break the record. We're going to spend more money this year in America. Americans are going to spend more money on Christmas and holiday presents than we've ever spent before, and it's because the economy's doing well. But we can't just have thousands of people come in here, get jobs where they get paid cash. They send most of that cash back to their hellhole country. And they put their kids in our school systems that they're not paying for, that they're not at least given their fair share for. We can't have that. That's taxing our system. And so, but it's something how people take sides, and even people on the news, people in the media, you know, well, we've seen that with this president, whether you're watching CNN or pretty much any other newscast. Well, now, all of a sudden, Donald Trump, the world's looking at him saying, what is he going to do now that this caravan, now that these migrants have shown up at our border?
I never knew we had so many countries.
What's he going to do? I mean, they're banging on the wall of San Diego right now to get in. And the folks in San Diego are saying, this is an issue. We've got a problem. You know, some people don't like the fact that these people come with their children. And then when they do get to our border, if we do get them and say, look, you're not allowed to come in our country this way, that we then separate them from their children. That's a big issue. 60 Minutes did a big show on that last night. That tugs at the heartstrings. Oh, why can't we let these people with children from these crap hole countries into our country? Why can't we? Why can't we? Well, we're a nation of laws. And there's a way for immigrants to immigrate to our country. And grabbing 10,000 of your immigrant friends and getting the cameras and getting the vehicles and starting a 2,500-mile march to the United States border, that's not the way to do it. They're only doing that because they want as many people to see their situation as possible. And, yeah, do I feel a little bit bad for them because their countries are crap holes? Yes, because, again, if their countries weren't crap holes, they wouldn't be taking a 73-year-old grandmother who's got serious leg issues and breathing issues and setting her off on a 2,500-mile venture to
the casino in San Diego.
Well, right outside there now. So stay tuned, because this is what you're going to be seeing on your national news over the next few days. And you know, us as a responsible country, we should take these people. We should make sure they're with their kids, and then we should send them back to where they came from.
And just remember, what you're seeing and what you're reading is not what's happening.
You could put your name on a list, like all of the immigrants who did it properly. You could put your name on a list, and hopefully sooner than later, you'll get to immigrate to this country. But the way you're doing it now is not the way. And it's something to watch it on television. All right. Coming up on the show, pretty soon here in Louisiana, you're not even going to need your driver's license, at least the plastic version of it anymore. And we're going to explain how you're going to get a driver's license and what you're going to do coming up here on Bayou 95.7.
God bless the United States. Thank you very much.
Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Hey, if you're looking for something to do Wednesday night, I'm going to be on the panel of a really cool show that's been going on around New Orleans for years. It's called Politics with a Punch, and they have local politicians and local media people, and we just talk about the issues of the day, the headlines, and it's a fun night. It's Wednesday night, two nights from tonight, and it's at the Eiffel Society on St. Charles Avenue. A few bucks, short money, but it's a good place. You can get dinner there, or you can just go enjoy the bar and enjoy the conversation, but I'll be on the panel. It's something I've done for years. So if you're looking for something to do Wednesday night, Eiffel Society.
And how many nights is that from tonight again?
Well, I'm confused with the holidays. Today's Monday. That's Wednesday night.
Don't assume that all of our fine listeners are like you, though, and they count how many days till it's another day.
That's a fun show.
Matter with you.
It's a fun show.
Yes.
So, the comedian Kevin Hart and his wife are taking some heat this morning, because over the Thanksgiving weekend, Kevin Hart and his wife, whose name is Aniko,
Mrs. Hart.
Well, Aniko. Oh. They threw a party for one of their sons, and the theme of the party was cowboys and Indians. And everybody who went to the party...
Here we go.
Everybody who went to the party was dressed as either a cowboy or an Indian. And she tweeted a picture, Kevin Hart's wife. He's a very funny comedian. His wife who has Kevin Hart's wife has 2.7 million Instagram followers. You believe that?
Why would that be?
Because she married Kevin Hart. Aniko Hart. She has 2.7 million Instagram followers. So she decided to take a picture of the 20 or so people who were at her son's Cowboys and Indians themed party over the weekend, where some were dressed as Cowboys, some were dressed as Indians. And I'm looking at Kevin Hart. He's in this picture. He's dressed like Kevin Hart. And she took the picture and then she sent it on Instagram and she wrote, "Zoe's Cowboys and Indians party was nothing but amazing! Exclamation point. Thanks to everyone for coming. We love you guys." Well, as soon as some of her 2.7 million followers saw that picture with that post, they lost it, Brewster. They said, "You can't dress up like Cowboys and Indians and having a party with the history of this country. That would be exactly like having a party where half the people dress as Ku Klux Klanmen and the other people dress as black slaves."
Right.
"And then you all come into the party and the Klansmen and the black slaves have a woohoo, honk, honk. Good time." Quote, "Disgusting," said one of Kevin Hart's wife's followers. So when people do blackface or dress as slave and owner for Halloween, you cool with it? That's what I thought, another one of her 2.7 million. I mean, I still can't believe Kevin Hart's wife has 2.7 million Facebook followers or Instagram followers. And this is what they get to see when they follow her on Instagram, pictures of them dressed as Indians and Cowboys. And so one thing about social media, Brewster, you know, I've said it 1,000 times. Sometimes people have lost their jobs because of things they posted. People have lost their careers. Some people have lost their relationships. They've lost their marriages. But you know, when you put something out on social media, the world will tell you very quickly how they feel about what you put out. You'll know very, very soon. As soon as you push send about something, you'll know how the area, the world, the people feel about it. And so now Kevin Hart's wife has to apologize for being so culturally insensitive. You know, somebody tweeted, "Hey, you married a black guy. Can't you see what you did wrong here?" But evidently, Kevin Hart didn't see the problem with it because it's his kid, too. And there he is in the pictures. And Kevin Hart's a comedian. And, you know, when they came up with the idea to have the Cowboys and Indians party for their son, you know, he didn't say, "Well, wait a minute. That's exactly like having a party with Ku Klux Klansmen. People have the party dressed as Ku Klux Klansmen and half the people dressed as black slaves."
I honestly just have plead ignorance here. I have not watched too much Kevin Hart. I know that he was here a couple of years ago for the Bayou Classic in the Superdome, and I just happened to be one of the photographers there and so saw him there. But I don't believe I've ever seen much of his material.
Pretty funny guy.
Very popular.
And then there were a few comments that said, "Please don't apologize for this. We welcome to the generation of the offended." And I kind of feel like that. But then again. All right, coming up next, we will tell you you may soon not need your plastic driver's license in your wallet anymore. We'll break that down for you coming up here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. The John Osterlin Morning Show is brought to you by the most ordinary man in New Orleans and Lamarck Ford. Yeah, I just want to say one more thing about what we were just talking about, because I don't think I agree with the people who say, you know, having a party where the theme is you dress up as Cowboys and Indians, that's exactly like having a party where the theme is you dress up as Ku Klux Klansmen and black slaves. I don't think it's the same, because when this country was settled, sure, the Native Americans were here first, but when this country was settled, when we would always come across Indians, we would always say, "Hey, let's hang out. Let's make a deal. You know, let's
smoke them peace pipe." Is that what you're about to say?
Well, yeah, and a lot of times
let's drink them fire water.
I mean, you know, when the pilgrims first got here,
I'm enjoying your explanation of how these two wrongs are going to make a not so wrong.
Well, when the settlers first came over here and the white man first showed up in the United States, yes, I know the Native American, the Indian, was already here. But with many of the Native Americans, we made peace as soon as we got here. Look, we're here, you're here, you know, we could live together. Now, there were some Native Americans that didn't want any of that. They weren't having it, and that's when the bloody battles happened.
Well, but see, you're doing what others are doing and focusing on some Hollywood types who decided to have a party, and I'm not sure which, I mean, one side, it's in 2018 to dress up in Klan costumes, which did not happen, but you're using that as an example, correct?
Of comedian Kevin Hart's wife threw a party for their child, and the theme of the party was cowboys and Indians. Took a picture, like a lot of them were dressed as Indians and cowboys, and then people on social media didn't like it.
Right. And are we to believe that she is so myopic that she wouldn't have figured out that people would be offended by that? What is the envelope? Where are we pushing the envelope in doing that?
Good question. She's smart enough to marry Kevin Hart, the comedian. He's a multimillionaire. She's got some brains.
Is this to get Kevin Hart's name out there? To get him trending on Twitter? I mean, I'm just fascinated by the sociological aspect of this.
Good.
And there's no right or wrong answer to it. It's just why? Why in 2018, in God's name, you're married to a celebrity and you're going to have your child's party or whatever it was, and you're going to make a big deal about what the costumes were, and just doesn't even matter.
Dude, there are
some
people.
But the costumes are going to be found to be in bad taste by some people. Why do that?
Well, and there are some people, Brewster, that think we shouldn't have Thanksgiving at all. Because what are we giving thanks for? It was so horrific and ugly what we did to the Native Americans. Now we're celebrating it by eating turkey and stuffing.
But I hope you were watching. That's not the example that was used. The example that was used, and if you didn't see this, if you didn't watch news over the Thanksgiving holiday, breaking news. A Charlie Brown Thanksgiving is now racist and bigoted because they put Franklin outside, not inside at the main table. They put Franklin, the little black kid, they put him outside around the card table eating popcorn and candied apples and not turkey.
And that had some dressing. People calling Charlie Brown and their writers racist.
And that, I believe, premiered in 1967. I know Charlie Brown Christmas came out in 65, so the Thanksgiving episode is probably 4 or 5 years older than that.
How did we
really?
How did we get this sensitive in this country?
Well,
and what is the exact percent? I have no idea of people that are really offended by stuff like this. We're so overly sensitive that they're losing their minds over a cartoon like Charlie Brown, over a picture
from 50 years ago,
like the comedian Kevin Hart and his wife put out because of their party that they threw for their one of their children, the cowboy and Indian theme. But there are people that say we shouldn't be celebrating anything about Thanksgiving because Thanksgiving celebrates mass genocide.
Right.
How the white man committed mass genocide against the Native American, and that's just not true. Sure. There were some Native Americans that weren't happy that the white man showed up here, but many Native Americans were happy, and they said, you know what? We can cohabitate together. We can live together. And that's what happened. It was just that some of the Native Americans did not want to, they didn't want to deal with the white man. They didn't want to go where he said to go and live or whatever the case may be. Like, I get it. I always wonder, you know, because here in America, we've invented many, many things. But I was going to say almost everything, but not everything, because obviously Europe was around a lot longer before we were. But boy, look at everything that we've invented here in this country. And I just wonder if the settlers didn't show up, if it was just Native Americans, if Native Americans would have figured out everything that was figured out, they might have. What do you think? They're going to be living in teepees for 400 years? 300 years? I mean.
No, I'm not picking on you specifically because I don't think that this is what the banner would be to have Thanksgiving dinner with you. But I'm just extrapolating on to, let's say that Mrs. Brewster and I were invited to somewhere for Thanksgiving. And if this was the discourse, I would say, I'm sorry, I'm not feeling well. I'm having one of my sick headaches.
Nah,
well. And I'd have to excuse myself. We'd have to leave. But I guarantee you that there were Thanksgiving tables all over this city, all over this country, that had conversations like
sure.
that.
Sure, but because where, people where are bringing were, it up.
Right, because you take one event, and that is the that is the ridiculous notion of the new Americans. The men with the hats with the buckles and the women with the shoes with the buckles, and they're all dressed in black. And they sit down and have maize with and you can't even say Indian anymore.
No.
A lot of people don't want you to say Indian.
None of my Thanksgiving dinner conversation was about this.
No.
No, we were talking about this stuff.
Probably much worse.
No, it was happier.
No, okay.
I'm talking about all kinds of fun stuff. But I brought this up because I saw people talking about what I've just been talking about over the weekend, saying that we shouldn't even celebrate this thing anymore because look at how we founded this country. It was blood, guts, genocide. And you know, we sit there with our families and our friends and we break bread and everything is so warm and so emotional. But look what we're celebrating, you know, the blood and the guts of wiping out genocide and committing genocide on a group of people. And that just wasn't the case. Just wasn't the case. There were lots of Indians that said, hey, all right, we've been alone here for a while. It's kind of cool. Some new people, new women. I mean, this is pretty cool. Sure, across the country, there were some Native Americans that didn't dig it. They didn't like the fact that the Europeans came and they fought for everything. But there were more Indians on the other side that said, hey, okay, yeah, you want us to live over here? We'll do this. We can cohabitate. There were more Indians on that side than were on the side that just wanted to kill every white European that they saw. But this is just some of the stuff I'm seeing over the weekend on my television set. When all you want to think about is, Thanksgiving football. And family and football and, right. And the overload on that.
That's right.
All right. Coming up next, I'm going to get to this story because I mentioned it, and it's in the news again. It's about the one big dump out there in Waggaman and how they paid off some people back a few years ago, including a radio talk show host, allegedly, to put the other dumps out of business. Well, that story is back in the news, and we'll tell you why on Bayou 95.7.
Thanksgiving is a very important holiday. Ours was the first country in the world to make a national holiday to give thanks.
Isn't he the cutest thing?
Bayou 95.7. Nah. New Orleans only classic rock. So a real messy lawsuit when it comes to a couple of a garbage company to dump. A real, maybe reignited. If you remember after Hurricane Katrina, there was the big dump out there in Waggaman. That dump was accused of paying local politicians and one local radio talk show host, paying them money to use their position in their radio show to help put two other rival dumps out of business. The River Birch landfill, that's the one in Waggaman. That's the big one. And that's the one where actually one former government official, a guy named Henry Mouton, who was the head of the fishery and wildlife here in Louisiana, he admitted that they paid me to use my job as head of the fishery and wildlife to do whatever I could to put those other two dumps out of business. The guy who runs the river, and look, nothing ever happened to River Birch, the landfill. Even though lists were found with names on it of local politicians and a radio talk show host, nothing ever happened to River Birch. They were too smart. As a matter of fact, the guy that runs River Birch, his name's Fred Hebe. He took down the United States Attorney, Jim Letton, and his entire office here in New Orleans. Fred Hebe was the one who hired forensic computer scientists to go figure out wrongdoings when it came to his dump, his River Birch out there. And Fred Hebe was the one who found out that there were people under former United States Attorney Jim Letton who were anonymously commenting on stories of the day on NOLA.com. And we're talking about the assistant United States attorneys. It led to Jim Letton having to resign. He had to quit because there were people underneath him who were anonymously commenting on stories of the day on NOLA.com. So that's why you don't mess with Fred Hebe. And I've always said garbage, it's a filthy business. Garbage is a dirty, dirty business. But I've always been fascinated with garbage because we need it. Without garbage business, you know what happened to this country? We'd die. We would just fill ourselves up with garbage. If there was no one to take it away, if there was no business, we would either die of the smell or we would suffocate. We wouldn't smell anything because the garbage would just go over our heads and we would suffocate. That's why I've always been fascinated with garbage. It's a recession-proof business. Well, anyways, the reason I brought this up again is because this lawsuit, Waste Management, which was tied to one of the dumps that was put out of business by the River Birch dump, Waste Management now wants to revive their lawsuit. And they're in a court of appeals right now, and they want to revive their racketeering claim against the River Birch landfill owners, Fred Hebe and others. And it's just a very interesting story if you've paid attention to it throughout the years. And one other thing that makes it more, now that this appellate court will now rule if this lawsuit is going to continue, if this is going to be back in the headlines, one other thing makes this very interesting is that that's the area over there that's been stinking up not only Waggaman, but Harahan and River Ridge. And when people are saying, "Wait, that dump over there, it's, boy, there's we got problems," that's the area. Fascinating stuff, and I've always been fascinated with garbage. All right, coming up next, I will get to this. I promise I'll get to it next. If you live in Louisiana, you may not need a plastic driver's license in your wallet anymore soon. I'll explain. I'm Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. So the John Osterlin Morning Show is brought to you by the most ordinary man in New Orleans and Lamarck Ford. And the state of Louisiana is now leading the way in a trend, a nationwide trend of getting rid of our plastic driver's licenses. And we won't need them anymore because everything will be in our phone. Everything, all that information. If we ever get pulled over by a cop, if we're ever going through the airport and we get through TSA and go through all of that crap, get on an airplane, we won't need our plastic driver's license anymore because all of that information will be in our cell phone and it'll be under a one company or another company, but they will have everything that you need that would get you, that would make that legitimate, your legitimate form of showing your driver's license.
I love it, and you know exactly why I'm going to say what I'm about to say. I love it because it just gets us one step closer. You know, now it's like license and registration, please, using the scenario of being pulled over for a moving violation or speeding or whatever it is. License and registration. Okay. So now it would be registration and your, I guess you have to get out your phone, which is a little bit problematical, but that's a separate thing. We're getting ever so close to registration, and let me scan the bottom of your left wrist where your implant is, where your chip is, and I love it.
Some people think
I'm loving it, Jerry.
Some people think that's where we're heading.
I hope so.
You want that chip in your wrist? You want an electronic chip?
Yes, 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 and yes.
See, that freaks me out.
Get used to it because it's coming. It's all part of my plan of being world czar, which is also going to happen.
Well, if we're getting rid of plastic driver's licenses so you can have your driver's license in your smartphone, in your cell phone, then I'm sure, like, right after that happens, Brewster, right underneath there, we're going to be able to have our registration. We're going to be able to have our proof of insurance, and you just whip out your cell phone, and here's all the stuff.
Whether it's a barcode that's scanned, or whether it's a QR code, or whatever it is, it's all scannable.
So
police officers will walk around with their service weapons. They will walk around with a taser, and now they'll have scanners.
Here's something I found fascinating.
But you see, actually, what's going to happen is a police officer will come up and say, okay, it'll be a turn up. It'll say, okay, turn up your left wrist. And when you turn up your left wrist, he'll turn down his right wrist, and then you'll put your two wrists together.
I have a problem with that.
And his scanner will then scan what is in your chip.
That's too much for me. It's coming. You want the chip? I want a chipless society. That's what I want. But here's what I found fascinating.
Why don't you go back to Confederate money, too, and the Conestoga wagon? What's the matter with you?
Guess how many the percentage of American adults that own a cell phone, a smartphone? I couldn't believe this.
I've heard this. Is it ridiculously high or ridiculously low? I'm going to say a smartphone or a cell phone?
Either or
both.
Well,
it's not the same question, either or.
A smartphone, just a phone where you could do this. A phone where you could do this, because I guess a cell phone alone, you couldn't put your driver's license in there.
Right, a cell phone does not automatically portend the fact that you could do that. So for the sake of...
A smartphone.
Okay, we'll use...
...75%. Close. 77% of American adults own a smartphone. Can you believe that? That means there's 23% of American adults, 300 million.
Right.
23% of those do not own a smartphone.
They still walk down the lane to get the mail, go to the mailbox every afternoon.
Can you believe that? Where are they going in life? And think about this. 94% of adults under the age of 30 own a smartphone. So that means that if you're 30 or you're under the age of 30, so if you're in between the ages of 18 and 30, 6% of Americans in between that age do not own a smartphone. 6%. Where are they going in life? Do they realize how much easier these things make your life? Look, and I've said before, I'm pretty simple. I like old school stuff.
I've said that before too.
I miss the days when you can just hop in your car. I miss the days when you could only be gotten in two places. People could call you at home, or people could call you where you were.
I think was what you meant to say.
Or gotten. You could only be reached at home or at work. When you got in your car and drove out into the country, nobody could get in touch with you. There's something about that that I miss and that I like.
Look, your device goes off here in the studio because I'm not convinced that you know how to make it not do
every
that.
Every once in a while.
And I've never yet see you pick up the phone, pick up your thing. I can't say clamshell phone anymore because you actually do have an iPhone 10. Or at least that's what they told you when you gave them your credit card, apparently. You never pick it up. So what do you? You might as well be out in the desert.
Well, I pick it
up.
You
might as well be buried in the desert. You don't pick your phone up anyway.
I pick it up when I'm not doing the radio show. If
you pick it up and you see that it's someone trying to reach you and you put it back down.
If I don't recognize a number, I never answer it. Well, and that happens in here sometimes during the radio show.
Yes, it does. And it's quite annoying. So I'd like that to stop.
But
we'll have a meeting.
But when I'm not doing the show, when I'm outside the studio, of course I pick up my phone. But I just want to know who these 23% of adults are.
Well,
that don't have a smartphone, and who are these 6% of adults from the ages of 18 to 30 who don't have a smartphone? Can you have the same kind of successful life as the rest of the people that do have those smartphones?
I don't know that, but I do know this. That same research from the Pew Research Center, that rag.com, whatever they are, that says that in January of 2018, 77% of Americans have a smartphone. Now, here's the delineation. At that same time, 95% of Americans report having a cell phone.
Okay.
So that could be a cell phone of some kind. So let's back that up to, let's see.
No, because I know some old people that still have a cell phone, but they don't want everything else that comes with it. They just want to get me an emergency, and they don't want to deal with anything else.
They want AOL, and that's pretty much it. Prodigy, and maybe America, and maybe CompuServe. Going back to May of 2011, the first time that smartphone data even pegs the needle, May of 2011, the Pew Research Center says that 35% of Americans reported having a smartphone. That is 7 years ago. And that's 7 to 8 to 9 years ago is when most people started to really get, it's like you and I were both on Facebook for the first time around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Around 2009,
ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At that same time, May of 2011, when 35% of Americans report having a smartphone, let me slide this up, May of 2011, 83% of Americans report having a cell phone. So you can see how that has grown, 83 to 95% for a cell phone, and from 35 all the way to 77% as the two lines go riding off into the sunset on their Conestoga wagon.
You know, those numbers Brewster just gave you, like he mentioned, are from the Pew Research Center. Some people really like Pew. Some people think Pew stinks.
Yes. I've heard people say that, Pew.
Yeah, they really stinks.
Yes.
Right now, there's only one state in America that does not allow drivers to use an electronic copy for their insurance card during a traffic stop, and that's New Mexico. But that's the insurance. We're going that way with insurance. And go figure. You know, New Mexico, they got all this great methamphetamine. But boy, you can't use your smartphone to if you get pulled over during a traffic stop to show them your insurance stuff. So anyways, with the driver's license and insurance, this is some people that don't like change. Hey, we're changing. Times are changing, and it's all going into your smartphone.
Chips are coming. Chips are coming.
I don't want the chip. I don't understand why you want the chip. I do not want the chip in my skin implanted in there.
Embrace the chip.
Puppies are one thing, but come on. Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. So Friday, there was supposed to be something entertaining and different. It's when the two biggest names in American golf in the United States of America played 18 holes against each other, with the winner getting $9 million. This was Tiger Woods against Phil Mickelson. It was supposed to cost people $19.99 if they wanted to watch it on pay-per-view. I didn't watch it. I was overloaded with football this past weekend. I didn't watch it for a couple of reasons. A, I thought $19.99 was too much. B, I thought if these two guys played each other 10 or 12 years ago, it would have been worth watching. But not now. So evidently, once it started on Friday afternoon, and by the way, Phil Mickelson won on the 22nd hole, on the fourth playoff hole. They were tied after 18 holes.
Spoiler alert!
And after the 22nd hole, Phil Mickelson beat Tiger Woods and to win the $9 million.
He's 4 feet, 2 inches separating Phil Mickelson from $9 million.
And there, at long last, it is. Tiger and Phil finishing under the lights. And the bright light shining on Phil, who collects every penny of $9 million.
Although what I didn't like about it, the money didn't come out of Tiger's pocket. Like, if Tiger Woods lost $9 million of his own money to Phil Mickelson, I thought that would have been cool. Here's another thing real quick.
It didn't go to any charity or anything.
No, I think there was some charity. They were betting like $200,000 per hole on the side. Okay. I thought that was pretty cool.
But they collected what they collected.
Yeah, I thought it should have come out of their own pockets. By the way, Phil Mickelson adding $9 million to his net wealth would be like the average American adding $1,600 to their net wealth. That's what they said. Coming up next, it's our commercial free ride. We still got a lot of other stuff we got to get to. Hang out with us. It's Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7. New Orleans only classic rock. Led Zeppelin there. So I'm sure that most people enjoyed Thanksgiving with their families. I know there's always some people that they get in fights and they argue and things like that. And I know, because last week on the show we talked about it, how there was a poll that was taken a week or two ago, and it said that one-third of Americans will not talk about politics at the Thanksgiving Day table. And I said, when I heard that, that's cool because there are plenty of other things families can fight about. But then I started thinking, like, what kind of a family couldn't talk about politics? They'd get so butthurt that it would ruin their Thanksgiving dinner.
Are you kidding? We've become a butthurt society. You know, I keep telling you about my friend that almost 30 years over a Facebook post, which, you know, I put on his a thread of a conversation, and he's very liberal. And he said, "Hey, can you take that off?" And in the course of me removing it, which I complied with what he asked me to do, he unfriended me.
Unbelievable.
And that was it. I mean, that was really our only mode of contact. We don't, you know me, I don't talk on the phone. I don't talk to Mrs. Brewster on the phone unless it's an absolute emergency. I don't like talking on the phone. And so that was the only way that he and I really had a way to, keep up to date.
But that's ridiculous how someone could throw a 30-year friendship away over a Facebook post. I mean, that's the kind of stuff, it drives me insane. Like, what's the matter with people?
Well, so you shouldn't be surprised that the same template could be put over onto a family.
Well,
in the year 2018.
I'm bringing all of this up because I got this story in front of me about what happened at a Gonzales, Louisiana home over the Thanksgiving.
All right.
Some guy... And by the way, he was a Gonzales, Louisiana Reserve police officer. He ends up shooting someone at his family gathering on Thanksgiving. What does he do for a living? He's a Gonzales, Louisiana Reserve police officer. 24-year-old Desmond Lane was booked into the Ascension Parish Jail Sunday morning on one count of negligent injuring. According to the police report, Lane accidentally fired his personal weapon at a family gathering over the Thanksgiving weekend and struck one of the people who was attending his family gathering. The good news is that person is going to be okay, and it's not a life-threatening injury. But the bad news is, after he accidentally shot a family member at his own holiday family get-together on Thanksgiving weekend, Desmond Lane panicked and took off. Like, there was no one there as he was running out the door after he just shot someone at his own place. No one is screaming, "But you're a cop!" I mean, as he was running out the door and jumping over things and cars. I guess that's why he told the authorities that he panicked. And maybe that's why he's only a reserve cop, because maybe over in Gonzales they saw something with this guy and they said, let's not make him a full cop yet. He's a reserve cop.
Pure speculation on the point on the part of John Osterlin.
That's what we do on this show.
That's what you do. There's no we, Kemosabe.
You know, when I grew up, I had a friend. Well, he was older. He was a reserve cop in town, and he wore the uniform, and he had the badge, and they gave him everything, shoes. They gave him everything except for a gun. And boy, did we make fun of him. I mean, he was older than us, and he would always want to hang out. I was still in high school. But he was the guy that would bring us to the professional wrestling matches. He was the guy that would go in the store and get his beer. Yeah, I know. And he was a reserve cop. Maybe that's one of the reasons that guy was a reserve cop and never made it to be a full-time cop.
Did he drive a old beat-up white van by any chance?
No. I think he drove a Camaro or something.
Well, that's even more creepy. Or is that the El Camino guy?
Trying to be cool. So, anyways, hope this guy in Gonzales can get his life together. And New York Dolls guitarist Johnny Thunders died here in New Orleans.
Hmm.
All right, in the French Quarter.
Hmm.
Thanks for listening to the show. We appreciate it. Ginty is next. Ginty. It's got your music notes at noon. We'll chat again tomorrow morning around 5:30 here on Bayou 95.7.